She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and I hope you caught that tagline. We don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you for joining us today to think with us, and thanks to the sponsor of our show, Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is changing lives, and indeed they do change lives. Goodwill changes lives all over the country. I am very excited about our show today, as I am sure you will be. It is live, which I love. We have Marion Nessel, who is, I want to do just pause, comma, dot, 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 and not embarrass her. She is an icon. She is a legend in the food politics world, and I can't do enough hyperbole here. I will give her a shout out for her credentials. She's a Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, a department which she chaired for quite a while, and a professor of sociology at New York University. So I was hashtagging NYU today when I was doing Twitter, among her many accomplishments. And in studio, we have Hannah Abdulaziz-Feeney, who is the owner of Nourishing Results and works with the University of Arizona Campus Health Service. Her passion is to empower us to create positive nutrition and lifestyle changes, and she indeed is succeeding at that. So thank you, Hannah, for being with us, and welcome. A few important announcements. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, where my shows can be heard on Mondays and Tuesdays at dreamvision7radio.com. We'll have an announcement very soon about us being picked up by another affiliate in Colorado, but please check out Dream Vision 7 Radio at dreamvision7radio.com. We are live here every Saturday at noon Arizona time at Mrs. Green's World, and invite you to join us each week. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid, and all of the podcasts from the show live on my website right there for your listening pleasure, because this is probably one you're going to want to listen to more than once, at mrsgreensworld.com, and you can stay connected with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Just a quick shout out about one of our national sponsors, EcoBella. They are in New Jersey, and I am so proud of this sponsorship. They bring to the market some of the safest, non-toxic, talc-free, cruelty-free skincare and makeup products on the market today. They are in over 4,800 markets in the U.S. and Canada, and this week they proudly announced their newest collection, which they are calling the Enlightenment Collection. And as always, I try to tie it into the show, even though I rush ahead because I'm so excited about our guests. I want to give them their time and thank them for their sponsorship. But to me, what you eat comes first and what you put on your skin comes second. So it's really an important sponsorship for me. It's important where the ingredients are sourced because it's all connected. You don't have to worry about any of that with EcoBella. I encourage you to visit their website, EcoBella with two C's, ECoBella.com. If you like what you see and decide to order, enter the code Mrs. Green and you get 10% off. Okay, so now after that hurried, let's get on to the Marion show, which is what I would like to call it. Let's start with you, Marion. A sincere thanks. When I looked at the research, I think you're on a radio interview almost every day. Is that an exaggeration?
A slight one.
Slight one, but not much. I mean, I'm thinking, holy not smokes. Much. And she said yes to the Mrs. Green's World, so I'm thrilled. And we have you for about 25 minutes, and you've written, I don't know, 12 books, 14 books, I'm not sure, many, many books. So I'd like to focus in on two areas, if that's okay with you, because you can cover a vast number of subjects. One is food politics, because it's so topical right now with what's going on with the ban on the 16-ounce sodas in New York, a bold move on New York City's part. And one of your latest blogs was about, it just affirms that even though the book was written in 2003, look what's happening how many years later, 10 years later. So talk a little bit about food politics and the current stir and the complicity there.
Well, when I wrote the book Food Politics, which came out in its first edition in 2002, and is coming out in a 10th anniversary edition this year.
Great.
Which I'm looking forward to. one of the big questions was food politics. How do these two words go together? And I spent that book trying to explain that everything about food is political. And I consider food politics to be a full employment act. There's so much going on. There's some new thing that's happening every single day. And last week was a particularly big week because the New York City Health Department was in the state Supreme Court in New York to try to defend its soda cap initiative. That is the idea that the largest size of sugar-sweetened beverages that can be sold in New York City, certain New York City establishments, is 16 ounces, and that if you want more than 16 ounces, you have to buy more than one. And that's the soda industry has taken the city to court, is fighting it as hard as they possibly can, is sinking an absolute fortune into fighting this. I think it's a completely reasonable thing to do. 16 ounces is two servings. It's about 50 grams of sugar and 200 calories. And for somebody on a 2,000-calorie diet, a 16-ounce soda is 10% of daily calories. That seems like enough. And from a public health standpoint, making that size the default size, you can't get anything bigger than that, is going to make people think twice. Do they really need another one? Do they really want another 200 calories? It'll just make it easier for people to control their calorie intake.
And, you know, I think there's somewhat of a, I want to make the analogy of like a Stepford Wives consciousness to consuming food at times. People just go in and put their cup under the dispenser and then go back for a refill and then go back for a refill. Does this at least raise the level of conversation, as you alluded to, with people really thinking about what they're putting in their mouth and how much of it? Because that's ultimately where the true change will occur.
Well, everybody likes a bargain. And if you can get a 2-quart soda or a 2-liter soda for the price of something that's smaller, obviously you're going to buy the bigger one. And there's now been quite a lot of consumer research about how all of this works in practice. And what that research shows is that most people, when given large amounts of food, will eat what they get. It's very, very difficult for most people to say, I'm only going to eat a quarter of what I've just been given. I mean, some of that has to do with, you know, people are starving in Africa and that kind of thing when you were growing up. But a lot of it has to do with something that's completely unconscious and that most people are completely unaware of. And even if they're aware of it, even trained students who are taught that larger portions have more calories will still eat more calories if they're given a larger portion. Now, food companies know this, and they know that large portions are a terrific selling point. And so they give people what people say they want, which is more.
And they want
money.
A bargain. You're right. They want a bargain.
Yep. And there's something very human about that. And the food companies exploit that because their job is to sell more food, not less. They're not social service agencies. They're not health agencies. If people gain weight because of their products, that's not their problem. They don't see it as their problem. Their problem is selling more product every quarter so they can report growth to Wall
right.
Street.
Earnings per share. You know, one of the things that shocked me, and I'm really glad you told me that your book is going to be republished in 2013, and keep us on, you know, let us know. We'll get on the mailing list. I'm going to subscribe to your blog. We'll help get the word out. But I want to ask you this. Since it was first published in 2002 and came out in paperback in 2003, one of the shocking quotes that I read that you wrote about in the beginning is that you could not get one person from government, academia, or food companies to go on record. They would talk to you. They would give you great information. Has any of that changed? And why the secrecy and why the fear so far back then? And do you see any glimmers of hope now? Is there more transparency or more people willing to step up?
No, I think there's less. Transparency. It's still, I mean, more and more people are talking to me, but more and more people are talking off the record. And we now have email, and People say destroy this email, don't save this. I'm not going to send it by email. You've got to talk to me about it, and you have to promise not to quote me. When I quote people who write me emails in my blog, they get very, very upset, and I often have to take it down or remove their names or do something like that. I mean, I just assume that everybody knows that if you send an email and you don't say that you don't want it repeated, that it's okay to quote. That's certainly what I do. I mean, anything that I write in an email is, I consider it open source.
In the public domain, I think you have to be almost like intellectually challenged. That's a nice way of saying it. If you think that what you push the send button on might not show up on somebody's Facebook page, really think twice about pushing the send button.
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to transmit this kind of information. But I have soda company executives who talk to me and who send me notes, and I was particularly amused because there was somebody from PepsiCo who was sending me all this stuff about Coca-Cola that I'm sure Coca-Cola would have preferred that I not know. I kind of liked that, but I didn't have anybody at Coca-Cola telling me about things at Pepsi.
So there we go. That's live on the wire.
Yeah, but now, people don't want to, the government agencies won't talk about it on the record. And individuals won't talk about it on the record because they often have financial ties to these companies of one kind or another. Soda companies in particular are remarkably Catholic is the word that comes to mind. I mean, they will give money to any group that will take it. And the number of groups and the complexity of the groups and the quantity of groups that get funding from Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola is just staggering. Thousands.
And I'm sure it shocks me. As a consumer, it shocks me, and I think I'm a pretty involved and educated consumer. So even to the point of exploitation, because I did read the blog about the NAACP and the Hispanic Federation, it's exploitation. They are some of the most at-risk populations. Here we have, you know, a very high Native American population with juvenile diabetes and obesity. There are so many issues. What was their shtick for being able to approach the NAACP and the Hispanic Federation to get them involved on the wrong side of the aisle?
Well,
my bias.
That's your bias.
My bias.
The NAACP has a long history of partnership with Coca-Cola. They've funded NAACP activities for a very long time. So they have a long, ongoing relationship. The American Beverage Association, which is the trade association for Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and some of the other soda companies, is leading the legal activities against the soda cap, and they recruited the NAACP, the Hispanic Federation, a bunch of other people as well, to write amicus briefs in support of the soda industry's opposition to the soda cap. The issue that's under discussion is a jurisdictional issue. It's whether the city health department has jurisdiction over the places where these things are sold, and it's one of those annoying little legal things that you wouldn't pay any attention to, except that the soda industry is sinking a fortune into
because
making
they
sure
have
that
it.
This doesn't happen. Yeah, they have it.
They've got it.
And they recruited these two groups represent these two civil rights, very distinguished civil rights groups representing underrepresented minorities in the United States to come along with this on the grounds that the soda cap will discriminate against the people that they represent because they'll have to pay more if they want more soda. They'll have to buy two instead of one, and it'll cost more. Well, that's soda company pricing policy. I mean, I once heard a soda company executive say that if people want, because I was complaining that the 8-ounce sodas cost so much more than the 2-liter ones. And they said, well, if people want smaller portions, they ought to be willing to pay for them.
I know. Oh, gosh. And in restaurants, the highest markup on that one of their highest profit margins is on soda, because it costs about 3 cents, I think, to give you a large Coke or a large Diet Coke, and they charge $1.75 or $2.
Right.
So there's a big margin.
It's sugar water, and if they're using high fructose corn syrup, it's subsidized because corn is subsidized. And so, in a sense, the government subsidizes the cheap price of sodas. But the ingredients don't cost very much. The markup is enormous, and the industry has convinced the American public that this is what they're supposed to be drinking all day long.
I know, and then there's
people like them.
And there's the diet soda conversation. I think I was literally...
That's a separate conversation.
I know. I was addicted to Diet Coke, and it took me years to get used to the taste. And then I started reading about, I'm glad you're used to the taste because it's probably killing you. So then there was the whole get out of that whole conversation. Let's talk about trust and with the depth and breadth of the information that you have, the research you've done. Talk about the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. There's been a stir about that this past week. Can you trust them?
That was the other thing that happened this week.
Big news, man. You were on fire on Twitter, I can tell you that. Mary Nessel, you're making the Twitter feeds.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Michelle Simon, who's a lawyer in the San Francisco Bay Area, produced a report looking at food industry funding of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics activities. Now, let me just say right off the bat that all nutrition societies take money from the food industry.
Right.
All of them do. I don't know a single one that doesn't. But never to the extent, not to the extent that the Academy does. The Academy represents more than 70,000 registered dietitians in the United States, and is the essentially the trade association for its members who are registered dietitians. And the Academy has a long history. It used to be the American Dietetic Association, and it has a long history of involvement with food companies and not raising what I think would be sufficient objections to food company sponsorship. So, for example, the food industry produces an enormous trade exhibit at the annual meeting that's really fun to go to because you get these big bags.
All these free samples.
You get all these free samples of food of one kind, or food-like objects. Healthy junk food is what I call it. And then they also sponsor individual sessions and individual speakers. For a long time, the Academy produced fact sheets. I particularly objected to these, and they don't seem to be doing them anymore. But they produced fact sheets on various controversial issues in food and nutrition that were sponsored by some food entity. And you could predict what they would say based on who the sponsor was. If you knew that the sponsor was Coca-Cola, then you would know that the advice would be that soft drinks have a place in healthy diets. If you knew that the sponsor was a chocolate company, they would be telling you about the health benefits of eating chocolate. But they don't seem to be doing those anymore, I'm happy to say. But the food industry presence in the Academy is so enormous, and it has been such a source of frustration for dietitians who are members and who are concerned about this, that this report has really stimulated a huge discussion about it, where some of the people who've responded to the report are very defensive about what they're doing. Others are just enormously frustrated because they want to change the way the organization presents its face to the public, and they don't know how to do it. And I would say that the need to change the face that the Academy presents to the public is an important one, because they're giving advice about diet and health to the public. And if they can't say, you know, you'd be healthier if you didn't eat so many sodas, if they can't do that, then their advice is compromised. They're not going to be taken seriously. And they're in a conflict of interest, a really serious one. And it's easy for me to talk because I can avoid conflicts of interest. I get my money from the university. I don't take food industry money. I don't get paid for consulting to the food industry. But I'm in a position where I don't have to. Other people who are trying to fund activities and want to be able to do things for the public and to make people healthier, aren't in the position of being as careful as I am about who they take money for. And, of course, the soda companies know this. And that's why they're so generous.
And they're vulnerable. I mean, I understand that. I was talking off air with Hannah and Taylor, who's in my studio, and talking about, I wrote, this is a total sidebar and we have to go to a break, but I wrote a very, spirited blog about, I called it We've Been Fracked, and it was about fracking. And I lost a client over it because they said, they're in the industry of supporting that, and they're very tied to the companies that do the fracking. And it was a great thing to have happen, because if they want to control what I say, I don't want Mrs. Green to go out there as being one of those that can be bought either. But it's hard, because I want to make this work as a business. And when they, dangle a big sponsorship in front of you, it's really important to look at that, because I want the public trust. And you have it. I can say that. So when we come back, we're going to have a quick break, and I know we only have about 10 more minutes with you. I'd like to talk a little bit about some rays of hope, and I know you're a big proponent of portion control, which I now know would not include a small portion of soda, but some of the things that you see as glimmers of hope and what the consumer can do to move forward, because there's lots of listeners out there that want places to start. So we will be back after a really quick break. We are I'm interviewing Marion Nessel, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, a department she shared. She's a professor of sociology at NYU, New York University. And Hannah will be with us. Hannah Abdulaziz Feeney, who is from Nourishing Results right here in Tucson, Arizona. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Oh,
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you just tuned in, I'm sorry you missed the first half, because Marion Nestle is giving us a lot to talk about and to think about. She is the Paulette, I don't know if it's the Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University. Among her many accomplishments, and in studio for the second half of the hour, is Hannah Abdulaziz-Feeney, and she is the owner of Nourishing Results, who very much certainly sees you, Marion, as an icon, and was thrilled to be in studio with me, because we only have you for about 7 more minutes, and then we'll be talking about you after that.
So, I can't wait.
So just get ready. It'll be all good, I promise. So, you know, before we went on break, I talked to you about it. To me, it all comes down to trust, and where does the consumer begin? What should we be doing? I know you're an advocate for portion control, but then there are other things about the tough messages that aren't getting out there that we as consumers need to just look a little deeper, you know, look for the facts a little bit harder, because the food aisles are just absolutely full of lies. That's what I call them. You know, this is fiber. You know, one daily allowance helps meet your vitamin C requirements, and they're full of sugar and genetically modified and highly processed foods. So, talk to us about some of the tough messages. There are questions in there, but I want to get as much of Marion as I can. The tough messages that aren't getting out, and where does the consumer begin, who's listening and wants to go in the right direction from the minute they, you know, that we're off the air.
Well, I would say the first thing is that everybody has to understand that food companies are not social service agencies. Their job is to sell food. And so any time that a food is being marketed, advertised, or presented in some way, you have to step back and say, are they trying to sell me something? The answer is always going to be yes. So given that, then you can, once you understand that and sort of internalize it, then you can start to think critically about the kinds of things that are being presented, and you will find health claims on food packages as funny as I do. I think they're an enormous source of entertainment, because some clever marketer said, I bet if we say this, people will think that this product is healthy and they'll buy it. Everybody wants to be healthy. Everybody does. And if you see that something on a food package is, that says it's going to make your kid smart or it's going to help your immune system, you think, oh, good, that's just the excuse I need to buy it.
I feel so much better now.
Yeah. And it's hard. And again, this is human. It's not because you're stupid. It's not because you're ignorant. It's just human. And remember that an enormous, astronomical fortune is going into trying to figure out how to get people to buy food products. This isn't something that's just, there is not a single accidental placement in a supermarket. There is nothing accidental about any food commercial. These things are fought over, argued over, and companies spend millions, tens of millions, to advertise their products and market their products in ways that people will internalize and not notice that they're being marketed to. I once talked to advertising executives. I was once at a meeting of advertising executives when said the entire purpose of marketing is to slip below the radar of critical thinking. If you're noticing marketing, they've screwed up. They've made a mistake. You're not supposed to notice.
It's almost like subliminal messaging. I mean,
It's meant to do that. And again, it's very human. And we like to think, all of us, that we're immune to this kind of thing. But I know that I'm not. I fall for it just like everybody else.
I know, and I do too. I was thinking about Stonyfield, the yogurt, and how devastating it will be to me if I find out that they're not telling the truth. And I've looked as hard as I can, but it's like, this is a American dream company that came back and is organic and healthy. And
look at how much sugar is in it.
That's what, off air, that's what Hannah said. I want to know what kind of yogurt you're putting in your smoothies to see how much sugar is in it. Well, there goes the Stonyfield balloon.
Yeah, take a look at how much sugar is in the yogurt for kids. So it's you know, even good companies that are doing really good things in trying to make cows healthy and, you know, those kinds of things, they still have to sell products. They when Gary Hershberg was still the head of Stonyfield before he stepped down, I asked him, how come Stonyfield wasn't, you know, wasn't caving in to pressure to increase growth every 90 days? And he said, because when he was bought by Danone, he wrote in his contract that he didn't have to grow as fast as everybody else did.
Wow. Wow.
And so that enables Stonyfield to do some things that most companies can't do.
Okay, well, I get it. And I just, so your basic advice is to dig a little deeper, think a little more, work for it a little bit harder. I mean, there is great information on the internet.
And one more thing. Food, diets are really simple. All you have to do is eat real food and not eat too much of it. Vary what you eat.
Right.
Don't eat too much, and that takes care of it.
There are no forbidden fruits. I was in a study with the University of Arizona. It was called Healthy Weight for Life, and that's what they said. There are no forbidden foods. I don't remember soda coming up. But I just think back to my mom, who just did not allow soda in the house. This was way, I mean, I'm 62, and she just said, it's just bad for you. So if we went out to eat, which was rare, one of our treats was we could get a Coke. That was it. So
yeah,
it was,
I mean, candy is bad, and a little candy is wonderful.
It's food for the soul.
With a candy one. There's nothing wrong with a soda once in a while.
Once in a while.
But for heaven's sakes, you know, 8 or 12 ounces, not 20 or 30 or 40
or
60.
People come in with these big, huge containers into our convenience stores, and I see them, and they just fill them up. It's like what you would take on an entire picnic. So I know that you gave us a half hour, and we're about at that break. I want people to know that I think the best place for them to visit is foodpolitics.com, but you get to have the last word on that, about how to stay connected with you, about how to find out the truth and stay informed about what we're putting on our bodies and the health of our families and our country. It's sad, the state we're in.
Well, I put news that you can use, I hope, at foodpolitics.com. That goes out automatically over Twitter, and I occasionally tweet things that I think are really important at Marion Nestle.
Okay, Marion Nestle. Okay, thank you so much, not just for taking the time to be on my show when you are a sought-after interview, but for what you're doing to raise the consciousness and help us have a healthier country and population, and I will be staying in touch.
Please do.
Okay, thanks, Marion.
My pleasure.
Okay. So, Hannah, now we got to be a part of this conversation, and she really is such an icon.
Yes.
And I mean, really and truly.
Yeah,
she's the real deal. She knows a lot.
And, you know, she started the conversation on food politics and really started talking about how influential politics are on the health messages that we hear and that we kind of get handed down from the government and into our health agencies, what people are then talking about with patients as health practitioners.
And the food that we serve to kids in schools.
Yes.
How about that? Yes. Isn't that great? Oh, they're going to school, they're going to get this nutritious lunch of fries, spaghetti, and candy and soda.
Right.
So it's so pervasive.
Right. And so what, I mean, she said kind of over and over, couple of times, was that the food manufacturers sort of feel like they have this hands-off, we aren't responsible kind of effect, which perhaps there's a little bit more acceptance of that when we're talking about the marketing of a certain food in a food aisle. But when the food manufacturers influence governing boards that then set the rules for things like food in schools and in our food systems, well, then who's responsible? Because if that's when that food manufacturer does carry responsibility, and obviously that's the problem, particularly when it comes to things like the Dietary Guidelines of America or for Americans, and anything that informs policies in feeding people.
You know, one of my biggest mantras, and I really don't think I have to go back because I get so present in the interview, is to give you a proper introduction and how we met. You are affiliated with the University of Arizona Campus Health Services.
That's right.
You really, really counsel people on good nutrition, on dietary problems and challenges. And you have your own company called Nourishing Results, where mm-hmm. you help people start on the path to a healthy life. So I want to say that.
Yeah.
And then kind of segue into the, you know, you had this at International Food Day. You had it rocked it. I mean, it was a raise the consciousness on campus, extremely well attended, about mm-hmm. healthy foods and organic foods. And, you know, you demanded of us some participation in terms of education. Mm-hmm. And I hope I get invited back. I hope you do it again.
Yes, Food Day is an annual event.
I loved it.
It'll happen again, October 24th. So
I'm going to block it out because, I mean, I just loved it. We just never sat down. The Mrs. Green's booth was quite busy and we had a lot of fun. But anyway, so in terms of what Marion said about the Academy of Nutrition and Dietitians.
Right.
Okay. You are a member of that. So right. it could be, it's like you, I see that as a layperson, as a credential that, oh, look, there's Hannah. She's a member of that. What is your voice saying about it is a complex issue.
Yeah.
Money drives it all. And it's so sad.
Well, it's sort of a weak fallback. 'Cause like you said, you know, you have to make a decision about who you want to take money from and whether or not that party is in line with what you feel to be important and true. And so within the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, there are subgroups, dietetic practice groups. And the dietetic practice group, Hunger and Environmental Nutrition, has really been one of the strongest groups of dietitians to say, this isn't acceptable and we should not be taking the money this way. And so they've developed their own set of criteria for whom they'll take money from for their sponsorship. So you mentioned Stonyfield, which is kind of interesting. Stonyfield is one that sort of checks out as far as the reputable kind of how they practice their business is in line with what Hunger and Environmental Nutrition thinks is important. So I think when you see things like this in the media, it can be very confusing, particularly when you then question, well, is that person who's supposed to be trustworthy, is she just going to tell me, you know, and is her education influenced by the food manufacturers?
By who's supporting her research.
Right. And so there's two issues here. One is with Michelle Simon's report, she reported that at these academy conferences and meetings where dietitians go for continuing education, 20% of the sessions have undisclosed sponsorship. So it's one thing when you go to a session that you know is sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Right.
You kind of know what it's going to be like.
Right.
But if it's not disclosed, then you get confused. You don't know that you're sort of being influenced by that party. And that is blatantly wrong. I don't know how anybody could see that doesn't create a bias. So there's a problem then for dietitians whose sole amount of education comes from academy, ongoing education activities. So my recommendation then for the sort of second problem of, well, who do you trust? Who do you go as a consumer? Who do you go to? I do think that registered dietitians are reputable. You
right.
know that it is a credentialed professional.
Right.
That's important. But you still got to fact check. You know, you still got to look at what that person's background is and what their practice areas are and whether or not they're a good fit for you. And so my sort of how I practice within the academy is I don't do academy-sponsored independent learning or a continuing education. So every dietitian would have their own way of kind of working with or against the whole sponsorship issue.
So it's really, I mean, I just, one of the things I loved about her interview is that she's so, so very real about how complex it is.
Right.
I mean, it is, and how money drives it. I think mm-hmm. that was just such an important point.
Mm-hmm.
And you absolutely cannot trust. I remember when Stonyfield was, they interviewed the owner in Food Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, why did you go to Walmart? Like, seriously, you're having organic, you know, yogurt in mm-hmm. Walmart? And I liked what he said. He said, the more organic companies that can get into Walmart, the more available it will be to the masses because a lot of really good healthy food is still unaffordable for a family of four. That's to me, that's another fact. If you can go and you're on, you know, a really hard, challenged budget and you have two kids, you can get a Happy Meal for 99 cents. And that's the sad, devastating part of it.
So I think there's also one of the biggest problems that we face is the sort of fallacy of cheap food. And the fallacy being in part because of subsidies and how that lowers the price of
which
of
we
things.
Pay for eventually. Thank you.
So that is one side of how it's not that cheap.
Right.
Right.
Because we're paying for it somewhere.
Exactly.
The consumer or the taxpayer.
Right. So then you have, okay, so you take in that cheap food, but what does that do to your health over time? And that then leads to greater health care
expenses.
And
then we pay for that.
So there's kind of that falsehood of what inexpensive food is. And I think that also gets to that concept of a bargain. You know, what is a value meal? Well, a value meal, if you're not looking at the almighty dollar, might be something totally different. And maybe it's different foods that cost the same even. So I think the other kind of falsehood of cheap food is that healthy food can't be cheap.
I
healthy
agree with
food
you.
Can be cheap.
You can do.
You can cook for a family.
A big pot of pinto beans with rice, with
you
brown
can
rice.
Do it,
yes,
but you can't do it without thought.
Right.
And I think that's one of the problems is that we don't put enough thought into it, and we don't make time for it.
Preparation and thought.
You know, driving through the drive-through, that still takes time.
I know.
You can use Whole Foods and do something quickly at home, too.
And it's just, you make such a valid point about the ultimate connection to our health and the cost to us as a society. Not just physical, I mean financial costs, but the health risks and our compromised
environmental impact.
Environmental impact. Okay, we are going to have to take a very quick break. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We are talking with Hannah Abdulaziz Feeney, who is the owner of Nourishing Results. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you more about the kind of clients that are coming to you and your overview on the hope for the industry and raising the consciousness of Americans for a healthier us. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 Best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habastore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habastore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit habitattucson.org.
The boys are back in town. Welcome back, everybody. I am so happy that my own bumper music makes me smile. The boys are back in town, but it's the women who are here now. So we are rocking it. We had on the first half of the hour, Marion Nessel, who is a Paulette Goddard professor. I don't have to say all that about her. She is in the political food arena of raising the consciousness about how incredibly political food is. Everything that goes in our mouth and the advertising and where it goes on the aisle. Just an icon. Yes, Hannah?
Yes, absolutely.
And also, I'm so happy that Hannah Abdulaziz-Fini, who said she would come in for the second half of the show because she is walking the walk. And you have a company called Nourishing Results at nourishingresults.com.
Yep.
Quite an informative, content-rich website. It's where I get my information. So
Yay.
Thank you for that. And let's, just a little bit before we go into what Nourishing Results does and who's coming to you, how did you get interested in it? You, Hannah. The whole nutrition.
Right. So there are a couple of those kind of moments, you know, particularly when I was in school, when I was at Arizona State from my bachelor's degree.
Why would you
degree.
Bring that
no.
up?
Here you are.
I'm just kidding. In all my wildcat regalia and my wildcat earrings.
It all started there.
I love you anyway. It's okay.
I was studying exercise physiology and learning all about wellness and prevention. And I had a professor who said, if every child ate the recommended servings of vegetables and fruits from day one, there would be no chronic disease. So that was,
honestly,
I don't know how true that was.
Say that again.
But
there would be no chronic disease if we ate right.
All essentially saying that all of these chronic
arthritis,
diseases are dietary.
Arthritis, juvenile diabetes, autism.
Everything. So that was something that was like, well, maybe nutrition would be interesting. So I started to go down the road of nutrition. And then in sort of personal life, I had some weight to lose. And I didn't really think that. I didn't exercise. And here I am studying exercise physiology. It's backwards. So I started running because it was good for me, because I knew that it was important and that it was good for me. And weight loss was sort of the side effect
right.
of that.
Right.
So personally and professionally, I was kind of learning more about the power of prevention. Then I read Marion's book, Food
really?
Politics. Yes. And so while I was in grad school, I read that book, and I remember the thing I remember most clearly was she was on one of the boards for writing the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, and the sort of sum result of all of these academics and scientists was we should eat less meat, but they couldn't say that. They could not say that because of all of the political associations.
Right.
And that to me was sort of mind-blowing because it made me just realize you have to think. You have to ask the question and understand who is influencing that decision and that that bottom line. And so that really framed for me how to interpret all of the nutrition messages that we hear, I consumer and I nutritionist and professional. Also in grad school, I worked with a couple of fantastic people, Jay Fleur Lohman and Tim Lohman and Lav Metcalf.
I know
Metcalf.
Them.
Yes.
That was the Healthy Weight for Life
yes.
group that I was part
so
of.
So I came in right as that project was winding down. But what they taught me was how to talk to people about their relationship with food and emotional eating. And so I see these as sort of clashing issues. We have this thin ideal, this concept that healthy is only at a low weight, along with body image, that you're only happy at a low weight. Along with all these really broken food system messages in our media.
Really, really broken.
And that just smashes right in the middle and leaves people very confused. And so then that's where I, as nutrition professional, kind of wanted to be, is helping people sort out all of that confusing information so that they know what is important to them as an individual, but how to also not internalize these messages as a negative and a fear-based problem, because much of what we hear in the media is if you don't do this, you will be, and it's always a negative. It's always
right,
a fear.
Right.
If you don't not eat that, or if you don't eat this, you will have a heart attack. You know, it's never anything that's very slanted to the positive. And that's what I think is very motivating for people. People really want to feel good. They want to feel well. And so when you ask somebody, you know, how would you know that you were moving in the right direction? How do you measure success? People often answer, I'll feel good. I'll feel better. I'll have more energy. I'll sleep better. And so if you can separate out all of that from, well, I'll just lose some weight, and focus on the positive aspects, you're more motivated and you're more likely to follow through in the long term.
Exactly. It'll be lasting. It'll be lasting. I mean, I can't believe you brought up Jay Flohr and Love and all those people.
They are amazing.
They are amazing. Mm-hmm. And I see Love. She's still, you know, climbing Mount Everest three times a week and stuff like that. I see her out there. I've never seen her in anything but hiking boots and hiking shorts with those long legs of hers. Yeah. So when people come to you, you know, I have a lot of questions about this. It's probably content for another show, but what are they coming to ask you for? And you do couples that come. What is the, do you have a typical client or is, give me the gamut of some of the people that come to you that say, Hannah, help me. I want to make changes. I'm scared. I don't know where to begin.
So I think the common question is, tell me what to eat. Tell me what to eat. Just tell me what to eat.
That would be something I would ask you.
Everybody wants to know. Tell me what to eat. And so people who are asking that question, maybe they come in saying, I want to lose weight. But as you know, you continue talking, there's all sorts of other reasons why they want to know what to eat. I also work with a lot of people who are trying to conceive and who are struggling with infertility and not being able to conceive as quickly as they want to, and working with some of the dietary implications of that and how changing your diet can really influence your fertility. It's pretty amazing.
It's all connected. I mean, you and I said that off air. Yeah. I mean, even the not eating meat, it's an environmental impact.
Absolutely.
If you eat, if you go meatless Mondays, I read somewhere this week that you save 84,000 gallons of water a year. One person. So there's another implication. So go ahead.
And the other group of people that I work with quite a lot are digestive health issues. And so
I think there's a lot more as
the nation, we all are walking around with messed up guts, essentially. You know, we've taken it on as normal to either be constipated or, you know, have gas or have heartburn. Like how many people are on antacid medications? It's not quote unquote normal
Millions.
To have reflux, but yet
Millions.
Everybody's on an antacid. So I do a lot of work with the gut and digestive health issues. And so that's something that, you know, somebody comes in wanting to know about their weight and tell me what to eat. But as I start asking them all of these questions, you know, people don't always feel that great. And they don't necessarily know how good they could feel. And what the possibilities are. And so I think because of that, that sort of disconnect to how well you can possibly feel, that value question is hard to answer in the beginning because you don't know how good it's going to be. So the time that it takes to make a plan for the week and determine what you're going to make and what you're going to freeze and how you're going to do it all.
And when you're hungry, what's going to be right there? Because that's when my most vulnerable time and so many people just grab something because I'm hungry and I don't care if it's good or not.
So the value is if you spent 15, 20 minutes at the start of the week, you wouldn't have got there.
Right.
You would never have gotten to that ick feeling. You would have just been even keel, good energy, good focus, good concentration the whole way through. And so that's really what is hard for people to invest the time, invest the sort of mental energy to make a good kind of plan for the week and grocery shop and do that legwork to eat real food. That concept of eat real food essentially means buy vegetables, buy fruit, buy beans, buy nuts, buy whole grains, buy foods that aren't in the aisles. If you aren't shopping in the aisles, you don't have to decipher all these marketing messages. But to eat real food means you have to shop and it means you have to cook. And that's another problem. People don't really always know how to cook. And so when I ask people to eat a plant-based, unprocessed diet,
right,
the next step is...
What?
Do you have a recipe for that? You know, and so, and that's the very practical and sort of bottom line of it all is finding your resources so that you can shop the perimeter of the store and do these things that you hear that relate to real food ultimately means you're cooking.
And you're not, I mean, the progress that we've made in our family is that our freezer now is filled with things like blueberries mm-hmm. as opposed to prepackaged foods. We just don't even go and think about that. There's the occasional slip, which you and Marion are both understanding of. There's going to be a time when I'm going to eat Stouffer's macaroni and cheese.
Yes.
If there's one in there, instead of that's on the daily diet, it's such a massive shift. And we do feel better
right.
about our smoothies. Mm-hmm. I mean, just one change when you talk about acid reflux, it just makes you a healthy person right. from the way that you start your day. And there are things in it that I would never eat as real food. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like disguised right. and I can just ingest it because it tastes really good. I have to look at how much sugar's in the yogurt
that's
we
right.
buy.
So, you know, another message that we hear is this concept of the best way to eat or the perfect way to eat, as if there is a perfect way of eating. And there's really not. We don't have to be perfect eaters all the time. We just maybe kind of need to challenge ourselves to what might be better, what might be less processed.
And maybe eliminating some of the big bad wolves. I mean, that's, or limiting the quantities.
So what I like to do is look at it from what could you add instead of what do we take away?
Awesome.
What could you do more of? Put more color on your plate.
Right.
Put more
right.
color there. Vegetables, fruits, grains, beans, nuts, these all have color, naturally occurring color, not food dye color. But you put more color on the plate, it's more interesting, it's more exciting, it's more fun to eat, and it's better for you. And that is much more empowering than, oh, I can't eat that.
It is so. It's such a different way to approach it. Now, what about, let's get a little bit into the conversation about the epidemic levels of what I would call gluten intolerance.
Oh,
so yeah, I know her face lit up. That's why when I wish I was on TV once in a while, her face lit up because it is absolutely every third person you meet now is saying, I have to go gluten free or they have celiac disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, in my opinion, not as a nutritionist or registered mm-hmm. anything, except official loves to ask questions, is the compromised food supply. Mm-hmm. There has to be a link to that because some of the food we're getting isn't even food. It's just something that we put in our mouth that fills up our stomach. And I think that's really true.
Yeah. So celiac is an autoimmune condition that's autoimmune gluten intolerance, okay? And it's a genetic condition. And celiac disease affects one in about 130 people, but 95% of those people haven't been diagnosed, okay?
That's what I was going to say. Now it's happening that they're getting diagnosed.
So people are getting diagnosed, and at the same time, a lot of sort of trends are happening. The paleo diet, just the concept of gluten-free on its own, even clean eating and whole food eating, kind of all of these are trending kind of fad diets that are essentially a lower gluten diet or a gluten-free diet.
So I have to ask you about the paleo diet. Mm-hmm. My daughter Rachel is a big, you know, supporter of that. Do you have a...
Well, so paleo is essentially a gluten-free diet, a gluten-free, dairy-free diet. And a lot of times when people go on these diets, they feel better. But if you do, it is crucial to say why. Maybe it's because you're eating less processed foods.
Okay.
Maybe it's because you don't digest gluten very well and it causes some GI upset. But maybe it's because you have celiac. And if you have celiac,
okay.
we're talking about a whole other kind of way of living in order to reduce the risk of infertility, osteoporosis, cancer, diabetes, thyroid disease. So it's a bit difficult because when you play around with or try a gluten-free diet, but you feel better, you have to chase down whether or not that's celiac or not. Because a diet for somebody with celiac is not the same as the paleo diet.
Right.
They are totally different. They're both gluten-free, but they are totally different.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I cannot believe we're getting the 2-minute warning. It's like what that was like that we were only on the air for 2 minutes. Okay. But we have to, in a minute, because I have to talk about, let me say that next week, the show is going to be a hot topic. I can tell you that right now. We're having Dr. Jennifer McIntosh from the University of Arizona's Institute of the Environment. She has a very different, research-based opinion about fracking. So another hot topic on Mrs. Green's World. Nutrition is not. I think mm-hmm. it's someone that everybody wants to hear more about. Mm-hmm. Tell people your website.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing you could say to do, I know know that's really hard because there isn't one thing and we're all different, but a little pearl of wisdom for people listening to walk away with.
So the website, as you mentioned before, nourishingresults.com. You can email me there. My number is 429-3418.
520
Right. So don't hesitate to reach out. Questions, comments, anything.
From anywhere in the country.
Anywhere in the country. My pearl is unprocessed, plant-based, tons of color, because it is good for you. It heals you from the inside out. And think before you eat. Think about where your food comes
Unprocessed, tons of color. Okay. And think about what you eat and
think
where it comes
about
from.
Where it comes from, why you're eating. Think before you eat.
And how you feel after you eat. If you want to take a nap, probably not a good
sign. If you
could
go that far, there you go.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for everybody for listening. Thank you, Taylor Gaines, for being our social media entrepreneur right here. Just watch for that name. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Make it a great green week and eat consciously. That's my little feedback from Hannah and Marion. Thanks for being a part of the world.
Yeah.